Here's the rundown for this edition of the Cigar Dave Show. Number one, astronomical price for new Nicaraguan-made Monte Cristo. Number two, Boeing in big trouble. United Airlines not far behind. And number three, burger Bidenflation. Let's kick off St. Patrick's Day celebratory maneuvers early, as in right now.
This is the Cigar Dave Show with the General.
As I think about it, I've got a 15-pound full packer brisket that is now brining in a brine bucket in my refrigerator. And I'm going to create that and turn that into corned beef along with some cabbage and celebrate St. Patrick's Day properly. It's been brining for over a week, just about 10 days. I'm going to keep it in for probably another week till the day before St. Patrick's Day, and it will be succulent, it will be tender, it will be juicy, it will be just like being at Katz's Delicatessen on the Lower East Side of New York. Cannot wait. Long ash greetings and salutations. A long ash snappy salute. Semper Delectatio. Always pleasure. Long live the Alpha. Make masculinity great again. Screw the enemies of pleasure. Screw the Marxist Dems. Hashtag make America great again. Hashtag Trump 2024. Don't even get me started about brain dead Biden's State of the Union address and what is going on now with Haiti. We're expecting in Florida these flotillas that are coming our way. And the Coast Guard, from what I understand earlier today, initially was told that they would turn back and repel any flotillas that would attempt to land and send them back to Haiti. Now they're saying they're going to let them in. Hopefully Governor Ron DeSantis is going to take care of that nonsense. Absolutely ridiculous what is taking place. This country has gone to absolute misery and hell under Biden. And I say Biden because it's Obama and Biden. I love when some of the, I got to get a kick out of this, when some of the media say, oh, Trump calls, instead of Biden, he says Obama. They're one and the same because Obama is calling all the shots. 90% of the Biden administration, former Obama staffers. And you know damn well Obama's calling everything. It's not Biden. The guy is brainless and brain dead. But I digress. Sound like Stephen A. Smith. Now I digress. All right, so let us stick to the points. But first up, the Cigar Dave Show is presented by Gurkha, the world's finest cigars, including the new Gurkha Pure Evil, blended for cigar connoisseurs able to handle a full-flavored cigar loaded with strength, power, and richness. Don't let the name fool you. Gurkha Pure Evil is pure cigar pleasure. Visit GurkhaCigars.com. And by Davidoff of Geneva and their Camacho portfolio of cigars, including the Camacho Triple Maduro, with a four-country blend of all Maduro tobaccos. Camacho Triple Maduro delivers an explosion of bold, earthy flavors, including cedar, pepper, and subtle sweetness. The Camacho Triple Maduro, available at DavidoffGeneva.com. Well, astronomical price increase for the new Nicaraguan-made Monte Cristo. The Cigar Retailers Convention, the Premium Cigar Association Convention, normally would take place around July of every year. But finally, the PCA powers that be decided to move it to a more appropriate time, and that is March, April. So it will take place next week in Las Vegas. And it's really when you think about how cigar patterns have changed with all these smoking restrictions in many of these states and in restaurants and bars, the peak cigar smoking celebratory season really starts in the spring, especially in the Northeast, in the Midwest, Pacific Northwest, and goes until October, November, although people smoke year-round. But really, when you think about people sitting outside on a spring evening, on a summer evening, by the pool, barbecue, playing golf, hunting, fishing, whatever the case is, it really starts around April. Then it peaks, or it hits May, and then we're in June, July, August, September, and then it starts to slowly wind down. That doesn't mean people are not smoking cigars. It just means that you now have an easier time of being able to fire up a cigar, especially when the weather is nice. Last Sunday, here in the Cigar City, it was absolutely beautiful. Blue skies, not a cloud in the sky, super light breeze, maybe 7-8 knots. Just a wonderful time to smoke a cigar. The temperature was around 70, 72. Very comfortable, no humidity. So after I did my power walk, I went over into my walk-in humidor and I selected a cigar that I will actually enjoy today because it was so satisfying and delightful on Sunday. Had my espresso. Perfect way to start a weekend day. And we're going to see that in more and more areas as the weather starts to break and the sun shines and we start to see warmer temperatures. So next week at the Cigar Retailers Convention, the PCA convention, many of the cigar manufacturers will be releasing new cigars. Altadis USA announced that they are releasing a Monte Cristo that will celebrate the founding, an anniversary edition of Monte Cristo, the Monte Cristo 1935 anniversary, Edición Doble Diamante. The cigar is being made at the A.J. Fernandez factory down in Nicaragua. Now, you know, I have to wonder about this for a second. Altadis has the world's largest cigar factory down in La Romana, Dominica Republica. Why on earth would they make their cigars at a factory in Nicaragua? They also have a phenomenal factory in Santa Rosa de Copan, the Florida Copan factory in Honduras. Kind of baffling. Who knows? Maybe somebody's getting some sort of financial advantage by making the cigars down in Nicaragua. I'm just speculating. I have no idea. But it just seems odd. Why would you? You've got two beautiful factories. Why would you make the cigar somewhere else? Kind of baffling. Inquiring minds want to know. But the cigar, which is using special tobaccos from the A.J. Fernandez farms in Nicaragua at La Lilia, San Lotano, and El Dorado, kind of like an El Dorado. I feel like whenever somebody says El Dorado, I think of a 1973 Cadillac El Dorado. Big, big thing. You know, one of those giant land yachts that gets like 4 miles to the gallon. Those were beautiful cars back in the day. And now the El Dorado is gone. Maybe Cadillac will bring it back. Same thing with the Buick Riviera. That was another great-looking ride back in the 70s and in the 80s. But three areas that the cigar will use the tobaccos from A.J. Fernandez's farm. And here is the kicker. It's going to come in one size, a 6.5 by 54 Toro, really kind of my favorite size, be presented in 20-count boxes. The boxes double as humidors. I've seen the box. Very, very elegant looking box. And here is the kicker. Suggested retail price of, let's play the high-low game. Remember the Price is Right? I wish I had the Price is Right music at hand. I don't. But remember the Price is Right, the high-low game, where Drew Carey is not, to me, I will never acknowledge Drew Carey as the host of the Price is Right. He is not a game show host. When you think of a game show host, you think of Bob Barker. I think of Wink Martindale. I think of Tom Kennedy. Those are the guys that Alex Trebek. Those were game show guys. Now, Drew Carey, I'm sorry, when you see the remakes of Jeopardy, or not Jeopardy, but Password and some of these other shows, they're using these stars that, I'm sorry, there is an art form to hosting a game show. I could do it. These stars can't do it. Bob Barker could do it. Drew Carey, I'm sorry, just doesn't have the gravitas that Bob Barker. You looked at Bob Barker the way he was dressed, always elegant, the big long microphone as one of the models would hand it to him. The way that he just commanded that stage and had that great aura and that personality. Drew Carey doesn't have that. But we'll play the old pricing game. Remember there where it's the high-low game where you look at a prize. Johnny Olson would say, Bob Barker would say, Johnny, tell us about this prize. Well, Bob, it is a box of Rice-A-Roni. It's Rice-A-Roni with the special Cajun-style seasoning. And you'd have to basically give a price, and Bob Barker would say higher, lower until you hit the price. Well, we're going to play that game right now on the new Monte Cristo 1935 Anniversary Edition Doble Diamante. Remember, let's go to Johnny Olson. Johnny, tell us about this cigar. General, this cigar is the Monte Cristo 1935 Anniversary Edition Doble Diamante. It comes in a Toro size, 6.5 inches in length with a 54 ring gauge. It comes in 20-count boxes, but you can buy them individually. All right, let's play the game here. Here we go. Let's get the starting bid, please. I'm going to do both. I'm going to be both the host, pretend I'm Bob Barker. Actually, I always should have been named the replacement host of The Price is Right when Bob Barker retired. That should have been mine. Not Drew Carey's. So I will play myself as the host, and then I will play some contestant on The Price is Right for this cigar. Okay? Here we go. All right, let's start the bidding. Bob, I'll say... Correction, I already made a mistake. General, I'll say $10. Higher. $20. Higher. $50. Higher. $60. Higher. $80. Higher. 100? Higher. 110? Higher. 130? Higher. 140? Higher. 141, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 150. Ding, 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 ding. You are a winner. $150 for the new Monte Cristo 1935 Anniversary Edition Doble Diamante. Now, the question is, for $150, do you also get a Blowjoy with that cigar? Now, I get that there's some cigars that have been expensive. Look, Davidoff makes great cigars. $20, $30, $35. Worth it. Padron, some of their family reserves are in the $30, $40 category. Worth it. But a cigar, $150, I don't care how good the cigar is. No cigar is worth an MSRP of $150. Now, this is a gimmick. They want to come up with something that, you know, and I'm looking at this cigar and I'm looking at the bands. It's got a gold and white band. Is there anything that much dramatically different from some of their other Monte Cristos? Not really. Now, they're saying that it uses 10-year-old age tobaccos. Okay. There are other cigars that use 10-year age tobaccos that aren't anywhere near $150. So when I look at a cigar, the question that you have to ask yourself, and I never tell people what they should spend on a cigar. There's some people that say, hey, money's no object. But I know a lot of people that say money's no object, and they still wouldn't pay $150. They wouldn't pay $50 for a cigar. Now, will there be some people that'll say, you know what, I'll buy one, or maybe I like the box, the humidor. Okay, I'll spend $3,000. Sure. And that's what they're counting on. That's exactly what they are counting on. Now, there's only 250 boxes because they know damn well they couldn't sell 1,000 boxes of these things. Not 1,000 boxes at an MSRP of $3,000. There is absolutely no way. So this gives them some buzz. And so they will sell for 250 boxes. They will sell. Most of these cigars will probably be sold as individual sticks. Maybe you'll have a couple of people that will say, you know what, I'll buy the box. But you're talking about 250 boxes times 20 cigars. That's 5,000 cigars times 150. So that's $750,000 in gross revenue. Now, there's, of course, a split with the retailer. Usually, it's anywhere between a 40-50%. Sometimes it's a keystone product where they double the, you buy it for, let's say, 5 and it goes sells for 10. And I don't know what that split is. But to me, this is more gimmick than it is a bona fide cigar that people will go out and buy on a regular basis. They won't. It's a limited cigar. But this gives them some buzz. And one of the things they're trying to do to entice retailers to purchase this Monte Cristo 1935 Anniversary Edition Doble is if you buy a box of these cigars, you get a diamond-shaped decanter with several glasses that have Monte Cristo as an incentive. So many retailers would look at this and say, look, for $3,000, you know, hey, it may take me a year to liquidate these cigars, maybe 6 months, but it's a nice margin on it, so they'll carry it. They'll buy one. You're not going to see people buying 2, 3, 4, 5. Most retailers won't. And they get this cool decanter. Now, many retailers will end up selling that. Some may keep it. Some may end up selling that for $350, $400. It's a beautiful-looking decanter with the two glasses. Most of them, I would bet, would use that and say, okay, if we're going to get this thing, yeah, we'll sell it. We'll sell it for $350, $400. So there's additional revenue. But you look at the price in certain states. If a cigar is $150 in a state like Florida that has, or Pennsylvania that has no excise tax, state excise tax on a cigar, just sales tax. But you look at California, that cigar in California is probably going to run about $240. In New York State, it's probably going to be, I don't know, $260, $270. You think there's that big of a market for that? I got news for you. It's a gimmick. I guarantee you there is the only difference between the smoking enjoyment of a Monte Cristo 1935 anniversary and let's just say a Monte Cristo Classic or a Monte Cristo White is about $130. That's the difference. Cool gimmick. Try to push the envelope. Trying to be like Cuba where they're saying, hey, well, you know, well, Cuba around the world, if you take a look, they're selling their cigars now in many instances, $100, $125. But there's a reason why the New World cigars, which is the term used for manufacturers that are non-Cuban, manufacturers from Honduras, the Dominican, Nicaragua, United States, Mexico, there is a reason the New World cigars in Europe are selling like crazy. And that is because the Cubans have priced their cigars so outrageously that most people can't afford it. And most of the cigars now are going to China. Hong Kong. Gee, I wonder why they're going to China, aside from they can sell them there. I wonder if the CCP owns Altadis. Kind of an interesting mystery. Nobody seems to know who owns Altadis. Used to be owned by Imperial Tobacco out of Great Britain. It was sold. Very, very strange. Very, very clandestine. Nobody seems to know who owns them. Who knows? I'm speculating. Is it the CCP? Don't know. Nobody seems to know, but I'd like to know. I think a lot of people would like to know. Are you buying cigars that are funding the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party? I don't buy anything that, I try not to buy anything that funds the CCP. And remember, the CCP has their hands in every company. So the question is, they own, whoever owns Altadis now, is it the CCP? Is it some Chinese other entity, which you know the CCP always has a hand in? Who owns them? Is this money going to the Chinese Communist Party? I don't know. But if you take a look at where they're selling their cigars, the Cuban cigars, you're seeing huge market shares now in the Orient, China, Hong Kong. You're seeing it in the Gulf states. You're seeing it in Abu Dhabi, in the Emirates. So cigars now that used to cost $30, $40, Cuban cigars, are now $100, $125, $150. And that is why many, in many situations you see many of the manufacturers from the Dominican, Honduras, Nicaragua, they've been in a constant backorder situation because the demand from Europe now has exploded. And once people try the New World cigars, they're like, you know, these are damn good cigars. And remember, when you can get a Cuban anywhere you want, anytime you want, it doesn't have that cachet. Remember, people want what they can have. Coors beer used to only be available in the West, west of the Mississippi. And so when people would go out west, they'd say, oh man, bring me back a six-pack of silver Coors Silver Bullets. Well, once you could get Coors in every convenience store, in every single supermarket, the bloom wore off the rose. It's not that big of a deal anymore. So the question is, $150 cigar, you have to be the person, you as a consumer, you make that choice. Is that worth it? For me, not worth it. Would I get seven times the pleasure that I would get from smoking, say, a Monte Cristo White or a Romeo y Julieta? The answer is no. And again, I don't care if it's 20-year tobacco. Limited number. We'll see how they sell. Should be interesting. But I'd like to know, who does own Altadis? Very, very secretive. Nobody seems to know. Go and look at, research some records. Nobody, when they were sold, it was supposedly some group out of Macau, but nobody knows. Very, very strange. That's all I will say. But if you think a cigar is worth $150, great. Have at it. To me, that's a hard pass. Gurkha has long been the king when it comes to opulent, grandly made cigars. And the new Gurkha Pure Evil more than lives up to that legacy. Gurkha originally launched the Pure Evil 15 years ago as a limited edition cigar. They went back to their blend vault. They tweaked the blend to add more flavor, more complexity. The result is a Gurkha Pure Evil that is loaded with flavor, full body, full notes of richness. Habano wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, Nicaraguan filler. Don't let the name fool you. The Gurkha Pure Evil is pure cigar pleasure. Gurkha, the world's finest cigars. Visit GurkhaCigars.com.
With an unlimited and secure supply of pleasure sticks available for the general to enjoy, it's time for National Cigar Litation Maneuvers.
As we enjoy some fine Irish music, getting in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day. Yes, it's well over a week away, but... Oh, see, as soon as I said St. Patrick's Day, Pendragon's Royal Baron, my German Shepherd, went crazy because he knows he's going to get some fine, succulent, tender, delicious corned beef. No cabbage for him. He'll get the corned beef in his kibble. As soon as I said St. Patrick's Day, boom. That was the magic word. He knows he's getting corned beef. All right, the St. Patrick's Day celebratory maneuvers continue. Now, I've got a cigar that I'm going to pair up with a fine Irish whiskey. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, last Sunday, beautiful day in the cigar city of Tampa. Spring has sprung. You can definitely see when we go from February to March how the weather starts to change. Although we had a cool winter, rainy. I loved it. Thought it was fantastic. But we now get into the warmer weather. If it would stay like this year-round in Tampa, that would be fine. But the humidity is a-coming. But my good buddy, Sammy Schmoyl the Moyle Phillips, one of the head honchos over at La Palina Cigar, sent me over a bunch of cigars for me to test, and one of them was the La Palina White Label. It was the pretty much the newest addition to their label series line, debuted back in May of 2021, about 3 years ago. Mild, very creamy, comes in one and only one size. A Toro, 6 inches in length with a 50 ring gauge, or 50/64 of an inch in diameter. Now, this particular cigar is an absolute, just the, as I smell this cigar, it's beautiful. Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper. The banda, or the binder, is from Nicaragua. And the filler, or the tripa, is Nicaraguan-grown Piloto Cubano. Perfect blend of Nicaraguan binder and filler. It is smooth. It is creamy. Touch of sweetness. Absolutely marvelous. Suggested retail on this cigar, $12. $12. Not $150. $12. Now, what I get, as I said, 12 and a half times more enjoyment from a Monte Cristo Anniversary 135 Edition Doble? Probably not. But I can tell you that this cigar gave me so much pleasure on Sunday. It was fantastic, so much so that I had to have one again today as we conduct the International Cigar Litation and Libation Ceremony.
Cigar-altering and highly sharpened leaf-exposing device.
Self-sharpening double-edged stainless steel guillotine ready for action.
Maximum BTU flame-throwing and heat-producing apparatus.
The Cigar Dave R&D Laboratories, I have got my five-star. Five jet flames, translucent tank, built-in piercer, small, light, bright, and tight, if you will. Beautiful-looking lighter. That's what I will use today.
Cigar pre-litation checklist complete. No faults detected. Area clear of all enemies of pleasure. Approval to go throttle up in 3, 2, 1.
All right, here comes the cut. Absolutely perfect cut. Can't go wrong with this cut. And now I'm going to toast the foot of this beautiful looking La Palina white label. Magnificent. Love the Toro size. Taking my time. Oh, the aroma. Just toasting the wrapper first. First few whiffs surrounding me. Pure heaven. I will puff and rotate. Great draw. Nice flavor. Low on the foot of the cigar. Need just a couple areas that have to get touched up here. Absolutely marvelous. As Frank Sinatra would say, just marvelous. Beautiful. Mild, creamy, subtle hints of sweetness. Very, very nice cigar. I would say this is a mild, light, medium cigar. Perfect for someone that's new to cigars. Perfect for somebody that only enjoys a cigar on occasion. Somebody that wants to enjoy a morning or midday cigar. Doesn't want to be overpowered. Can't go wrong with this La Palina white label. And now I need something to accompany this beautiful cigar that has a little bit of Irish in it, and I've got the exact perfect selection.
Scotch, bourbon, beer. This is the Bold Alpha Weekly Spirits Tasting on the Cigar Dave Show.
Almost dropped my snifter here on the glass part of the table, of the desk. All right, let me now open up. This is a bottle of Jameson. Jameson Triple Distilled Irish Whiskey. I will tell you the story about Jameson. They have been distilling since 1780, so they've been around a while. One of the original of the six main Dublin distillers. It is now distilled at the New Middleton Distillery in County Cork. Best-selling Irish whiskey in the world. Over 8 million cases that are sold in over 130 countries. Now let's talk about this particular whiskey. First up, if you look at Jameson, the Triple Distilled is their flagship, but they have some unique expressions now. They've got the Jameson Black Barrel. They've got a Stout Edition, which is finished in craft beer barrels, an IPA that are finished in IPA barrels. They've got the Orange, which is a spirit drink, and they've got what they call their cold brew, whiskey and coffee. So they're kind of a little bit of everywhere. But when you look at the original, crafted in 1780, this has just the aroma on here. I'm getting pear. I'm getting maple. I'm getting some brown sugar. Absolutely amazing aroma. Cannot go wrong. This is very, very smooth. Here's the thing. What's the difference between Irish whiskey and other whiskeys? It is triple distilled. Every time they distill it, you get more unique flavors and subtleties, and it gets smoother every single time. So this is a very nice, and most of the Irish whiskeys tend to be on the mild side, mild to medium, not overpowering, not a lot of peat. So I'll say cheers, and we'll say Erin go brow, Erin go puff. Wow. Smooth. Wow. Just absolutely amazing notes of maple, honey. This is just, I got to take it up. Tons of vanilla on here. Wow. Everybody should have a bottle of Irish whiskey in their cigar lounge or in their bar. Reason being, it's so smooth. Even people that may not love whiskey, you give them some Irish whiskey, especially this Jameson, can't go wrong. And you're talking about $24 on average for a 750 milliliter bottle of this Jameson. Absolutely magnificent. Can't go wrong. Let me take a puff of my La Palina white label. Mm-hmm. Very smooth. And now a sip of my Jameson Irish whiskey. Mm. Smashingly delightful. Cannot go wrong. Yes, we're early for St. Paddy's Day, but so what? Celebrate early. There's no law against that. Maduro cigar wrappers are known for their unique complexity of flavor that include richness, spiciness, and subtle notes of sweetness. Now, if you take a Maduro wrapper and make an entire cigar of Maduro wrapper and Maduro binder, Maduro filler, what do you get? The Camacho Triple Maduro, a Mexican San Andreas Maduro wrapper, a Mexican Corojo Maduro binder, and then Maduro fillers from Honduras, the Dominican Republic, and Brazil. You get a cigar that is dark, rich, full-on flavor, medium to full-bodied, with notes of cedar, roasted nuts, some pepper, and a subtle sweetness. The Camacho Triple Maduro, available at DavidoffGeneva.com. Cigarro Dave from Humidor 1A, Command O Center Alpha, here in the Cigar City. Manly, yes, but I like it too. I had my Irish Spring, used my Irish Spring soap. Of course, I am not a leprechaun. However, Mick the Brit in our European Theater of Operations qualifies for leprechaun status. But we will be enjoying St. Paddy's Day next week. Got my corned beef that is brining. Cannot wait to get at it. Now, we have spoken often about Boeing. The 737 MAX, as we refer to it here on the Cigar O'Dave Show, the 737 crap. That plane and that program should be scrapped, should be dumped. No ifs, no ands, or buts. It is inherently an unstable airplane. It was designed as an unstable airplane. That's why they had to put that MCAS cockamamie system on there, that maneuvering augmentation system, so that if the nose with too much power, if it rose too much, it would override the pilot and lower it and so on. And that's where all the problems began. But 2024 has started out just glowingly for Boeing. Monday, a 787 Dreamliner, a LATAM flight from Australia to New Zealand, eventually going, I think it was going to Chile, if I'm not mistaken, fell dramatically. LATAM called it a technical event. Now, apparently the pilot didn't say anything after this happened. People hit their head. It appeared as if, from what I can gather, that the plane nosed over in such a harsh way that it almost went into zero gravity or negative Gs. Where, you know, if you've seen some of those flights where you see the astronauts training and you see them floating around in the cabin, the way they do that is that they basically climb and then they lower the nose dramatically and then they go up again. So basically you see these oscillations, and that's probably what happened. Now, the pilot apparently talked to some people afterward on the plane, some passengers, and said that he lost his controls. They basically, their controls went out. Now, that is a fly-by-wire system, meaning it uses energy impulses. There is no manual cable from the yoke in the cockpit to the ailerons or the other control surfaces, the rudder. Basically, it is a system of electrical wires where it uses a computer, and the inputs from the yoke, whether you go right, left, up, down, nose it up, nose it down, send electrical signals to the flight controls to make their movements. Airbus has used those for a long time. The 787 uses them. The new 737s use them. Now, the 757, 767, great airplanes, by the way. 757, without a doubt, my favorite Boeing. Without a doubt. Beautiful. That, you look at that 757, that bird sitting on the ground, it looks like it wants to fly. Comfortable, large cabin. Amazing power on those. There's two types of engines. There's the Rolls-Royce RB211 ultra-high bypass turbofans, and then there's the Pratt & Whitney's. But every pilot will tell you the 757 flies like a sports car. Loads of power. Plenty of power. That thing can climb like a banshee. That uses good old-fashioned control relays. So there's basically pulleys and so on. So there's no, it's not a high-tech type of control system. Whereas what we're seeing on the 787 and some of the newer planes, I think the 777 as well. So that's an issue. All of a sudden you're flying and you lose control. That is a huge problem. In fact, I just saw a story today that New Zealand is seizing the LATAM Boeing 787 black boxes to see exactly what happened, why that plane nosed over in midair. And again, according to the pilots, the airline said a technical event during the flight which caused a strong movement. Now, one of two things happened. The autopilot may have failed temporarily. That's a possibility. The fly-by-wire system may have gone, who knows? But apparently, New Zealand said that when they reviewed the black boxes, the images revealed damage to the plane after that strong movement. And passengers said the plane felt like it dropped in midair. A lot of people were injured. They said some people who were on the plane, some passengers, they didn't have their seatbelt on, and they ended up getting, basically flew out of their seat, hit their head. That's why I always keep the lap strap on when even in smooth air, because you never know. So that's the first, I shouldn't say the first, there was a whole bunch of issues. I mean, going way back now, beginning of the year, we saw that Alaska Airlines 737 MAX, the part of the plane, there's a plug. When they don't use an emergency exit, they put a plug in it. Well, there are no bolts attached. And now when the NTSB for 2 months has wanted to get, number one, the video, they wanted to get surveillance video of who was working because the whole factory's got cameras everywhere. They've been trying to get a hold of that. And then Boeing says, well, it was accidentally over-recorded. Someone recorded over that. You think that was accidental? Come on, Boeing. Who are you kidding? And then when they said they wanted to get the NTSB said, we want the records. We want to see the maintenance records. Now, one thing on every airplane, whether you're flying a Cessna 152 or you are flying an Airbus A380 or a Boeing 737 crap, there are several types of logbooks that are always accompany the airplane. They don't necessarily accompany the airplane on the plane, but every registration number of the airplane, every aircraft, has usually three types of logbooks. There's an airframe logbook, there's a power plant logbook or an engine logbook, and then there's an avionics logbook. Sometimes the avionics is combined with the airframe. Now, as an aviator myself, somebody that has flown, that has owned airplanes, I've always kept them separate. So I have three logbooks, one for the engine, the power plant, one for the airframe, one for the avionics. So let me give you an example. What would be in there? If you change a tire, you need a new tire. You change the tire, there is a sticker that goes in with the aircraft serial number, the tail number, the date, and the technician who did the work, the A&P, the airframe and power plant, FAA licensed mechanic, and they have a description. Replaced left tire due to low pressure or due to low tread with a Michelin RX, and I'm making this up, RXC17-B, filled to with nitrogen to 32 pounds of pressure. Signs off on it, it goes in the logbook. So I can go back and look at anything from a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and say, now, hey, did we ever replace that battery number two? Did we ever do anything on this particular incident? It's all in the logbook. And when a new part comes in, if there is a serial number on the part, it is put in that sticker that goes in the logbooks. So when Boeing was going to at the factory and they were putting on that plug onto the door, you would have a logbook entry. saying door plug was removed for inspection, replaced with four bolts, lubed with so-and-so, and it was done on this date. And here's the person that did the work, or the people, and signed off by a FAA-licensed mechanic. And TSB wants that logbook entry. One little problem. Boeing said, we can't find it. There was no logbook entry done. These are amateurs. I'm sorry. Every single item on that airplane is put in the logbook. Every radio, every system with a serial number is put in that logbook. When they build the aircraft, it shows you. We put in to these type of GPSs or these type of flight management system. It gives you the brand name. It gives you the serial number. And when you replace it with the information that identifies it. This is standard aviation practice that has been in force for I don't know how many years. Correction, not years, decades. Probably going back 70, 80 years. And yet Boeing can't find it? So a panel blows off in flight, and Boeing has no record of them actually putting that on and bolting it on. Major failure. And then when we look at some of the other issues, late February, pilots on a United Airlines 737 crap landing in Newark reported that upon landing, the rudder controls jam, they were inoperable as the plane landed. Now, why do you need rudder when you're landing? Well, you can have crosswinds. You got to keep that nose wheel and the fuselage lined up straight. You don't want to come in sideways. So when you have wind coming in or there's a crosswind, you use your ailerons right and left, and then you also use the rudder right and left to make sure you keep that airplane aligned. And when they landed, you use your rudders, your rudder pedals and your rudder to steer straight, adjust if you're going a little too far left, too far right. You use that to keep the airplane straight down the runway as you decelerate. And then once you get to about 10 knots, then you use the tiller steering. But the rudders are what keeps it straight, especially when you're landing. You've got thrust reversers going on. You use your rudders. No rudders, no longitudinal control. Big problem. And there were two 737 accidents, all fatal. I think they happened about 5 years apart, and it was a big mystery. I just happened to see something on YouTube about this, and I remember. It was the first plane was a United aircraft going into Colorado Springs, a 737 Colorado Springs, Colorado, and the second U.S. Air at the time, 737 going into Pittsburgh. They're descending, and all of a sudden, the airplane rolls over. The rudders were inoperable and just jammed. They found out that the hydraulic fluid at a certain temperature caused the hydraulic control to freeze. And then when you hit, if you wanted, let's say you're banking left and you wanted to go right, when you hit it right, it kept going left. So it put it right into the ground, and it took, I think, almost 10 years to finally figure out what took place, but the NTSB did. NTSB last week said Boeing has not provided the records, the documentation they have requested. Now, they also found out that some of the mechanics, when they were installing these door plugs or these door seals, used Dawn dishwashing liquid as a lubricant on these door seals. I assure you, there is no manual written by Boeing, a maintenance manual, that states that Dawn dishwashing detergent should be used as a lubricant. What the hell is going on at Boeing? Couple other things that took place. Last week, United Airlines flight from San Francisco to Japan lost a tire on takeoff. Now, that's not Boeing's fault. That's United Airlines' fault. United's got major maintenance problems, major issues. I don't know if it's DEI, I don't know if it's they're hiring incompetent people, or if their executives aren't supervising properly. When I say lost a tire, I don't mean the tire exploded or deflated, ran out of nitrogen. It fell off the airplane and landed in an employee parking lot at San Francisco Airport. One of the cars looked like a crushed accordion. The plane returned, actually landed in Los Angeles safely. This past Monday, a 777-300 from Sydney, Australia to San Francisco, taking off. Hydraulic fluid is just squirting from the landing gear. And apparently, there was somebody that was filming the takeoffs. You have these aviation enthusiasts who stream live on YouTube, or they just take video and they post it on their social media sites, YouTube, whatever the case may be, happen to see this. And apparently the plane was en route to San Francisco, and after an hour or so ended up turning back. Now, I don't know if the person who shot the film or the video ended up calling the control tower and saying, hey, you got to see this. But somewhere along the line, the pilots turned around and they landed the airplane back to Sydney. What is going on at Boeing? What the hell is going on at United? Major, major problems. The FAA conducted a compliance inspection. 97 points. Out of the 97 points of compliance, Boeing failed 33 of them, or 34% failure rate. Spirit AeroSystems, which manufactures the fuselage and that plug that goes in to the 737, that door plug, if you're not using it for emergency exit, they failed 7 of 13 audit points, 54%. By the way, Boeing announced they're buying Spirit AeroSystems. And one of the problems that we've seen is that the aircraft manufacturers like Boeing or McDonnell Douglas, now Airbus, they used to produce many of their own parts, their own fuselage, wings. Now what they do is they subcontract that out. So the fuselage is made, I think, in Kansas. The wings could be made, say, in Japan. The nose could be made somewhere else. So you got all these parts that are coming in. And of course, Boeing is not inspecting all these things. And so you've got these issues. So Boeing announced they're going to buy Spirit AeroSystems that manufactures the fuselage. No fuselage, no aircraft. 54% failure rate. FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker said that the FAA found issues with really important aspects, and I'm using that as a quote, really important, of Boeing's manufacturing and assembly line. Quote, it wasn't just paperwork issues. Sometimes it's the order the work is done. Sometimes it's tool management. It sounds kind of pedestrian, but it's really important in a factory that you have a way of tracking your tools effectively so you have the right tool and that you know you haven't left it behind. Number of years ago, at the Boeing 787 factory in Charleston, aircraft were coming out and they were finding, the airlines were taking delivery and they're doing maintenance. They're finding all these tools that were lying all over the place. And that can be a hazard because you have all these wires and electrical wires and branches of wires. You get a tool that whacks one of those, it's a major problem. Just like a surgeon, when they operate, they start with an inventory of all the scalpels they have, clamps, scissors, everything. So they know at the beginning of surgery exactly what they have. And before they close up, they take an inventory to make sure nothing is left in. The same thing with Boeing, only they left all sorts of nonsense in. Tools, you name it. And here's what's even weirder. That there was a whistleblower who said that there were all sorts of issues at the 787 factory in Charleston. Talked about all sorts of problems. He was testifying against Boeing in a case. Three days, and he had another fourth day, or part of a fourth day. This is a week ago Saturday, or actually last Saturday. Everything's fine. His attorney said he was testifying, no problem, and he's due to report to testify on Saturday, but he's found dead in his car in a parking garage. And they say that self-inflicted gunshot wound. Why? Because, well, they said he had a gun and his hand was on the trigger to the right. Now, you don't think that's a little suspicious? Somebody had the whistleblower whacked. I don't know who it was, but I can tell you that if I'm the cops, I am going to investigate quite in tremendously detail. I want to know everything. Where did he go? What happened? I'm sorry, this guy wasn't suicidal. And his attorney said he was fine. He was no issues. You're telling me that when he testifies for 3 days in a row, scheduled to testify on the fourth day, but then all of a sudden he decides that he's going to whack himself? I don't think so. Who knows who did it? Could be somebody at the Boeing factory, somebody with ties to Boeing. We don't know. But it sure as hell suspicious. Doesn't exactly pass the smell test. So Boeing is an absolute disaster area. That 737 MAX program should be shut down. Scott Kirby, CEO of United Airlines, came out yesterday and said that he wants all work on any 737 MAX 10s, which is the larger version, to stop because that thing's over a year away from being certified, if it gets certified at all. And they should start working on the 737 MAX 9s for them, but he's also looking for Airbus 320s and 321s. If it were me, I would cancel the order at Boeing. It's a garbage airplane. Always has been, always will be. The proof is in the pudding. Number of former Boeing employees who worked on the airplane, who were former engineers, said, I wouldn't put myself or my family on that airplane. They had one former engineer said that he was scheduled, when he looked at it, there was a plane change from a 737, I think 800 to a 737 MAX. He changed his flight. Said, that's it, not coming on. I wouldn't take one of those 737 craps. They're garbage. And Dave Calhoun's, the CEO, has been an absolute disaster. Where's the board of directors? If it were me, and I'm the CEO, I say, number one, we're going to stop everything at the factory. We're going to stop everything. And we're going to do what is right. If it takes us 6 months until we build an airplane, then so be it. But we've got to get this straightened out. And I would cancel the program and say we're going to do a clean sheet design of a new mid-size aircraft that is going to use all the good technology. It's not going to have a bullshit MCAS, maneuvering characteristic augmentation system, because the airplane has been stretched to death, that in order to put those big engines on it, you had to come up with this computerized augmentation system because it's an inherently unstable aircraft. Cancel the program. And if I'm American Airlines or Delta that has orders, I say, you know what? We're done. Want a clean sheet design. If it takes you 5 years, so be it. But we're not going to buy these garbage airplanes. And I'm amazed. Delta announced not that long ago an order for the 737 crap series. Why? I'll tell you why. Because they got it cheap. Because Boeing can't give these things away now. So they're giving them magnificent deals. The Airbus 320 and 321 is a superior airplane. The Boeing 757 is a superior airplane. The Boeing 727, as low technology as it is far better than the 737 craps. Boeing needs to get back to having engineers in charge, becoming engineering first, engineering centric, not financial centric. For many years, the guys that ran Boeing came from the engineering end of things. And their whole thing was, we engineer. And that was before all these computer-assisted designs and all these other fancy technological computerization models they have today. They didn't have that back then. Yet, they built phenomenal airplanes, the 707, the 727, in his early days, the 737, 757, 767. They went astray. When they started bringing financial-oriented executives to run the company, that's when the company went to hell. Same thing with General Motors. Remember, they promoted Roger Smith, who was, I think, their chief financial officer. And he said, people will buy whatever we make. Well, they made absolute garbage, and people stopped buying it. The quality sucked, and that's when all the foreign imports started coming in. Now, General Motors makes excellent cars. Why? because they brought in engineering types to run the company. Mary Barra, the CEO, came from the engineering side of things, not from the financial side of things. And GM is a far better company today, making far superior products than they did 40 years ago, 30 years ago. Boeing must stop. They should scrap the 737, have a total stand down and say, we are going to change executives. Get the board involved. You know, these board members make a couple of hundred grand a year to do what? Get involved. They need to start kicking some ass. Dave Calhoun, the CEO's got to go. Top of the executive suite needs to go and put in engineers and get things right. It is unacceptable to fail 35 to 50% of FAA audits on items that are crucial to aviation and passenger safety. Boeing used to be the gold standard. Now it's the shit standard. 737 MAX, I would not go near. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Get your act straight, Boeing. It's an absolute embarrassment. And it's crucial they do because it's such a huge employer and it is such a huge exporter. All the foreign airlines buy these airplanes. So it is crucial to the economy of the United States. Get the board of directors, Boeing board of directors, you must act. Get rid of your CEO, get rid of your top executives, and start bringing in engineering folks that will get the job done to bring back the tremendous shine and luster that Boeing once had. All right, finally, Bidenflation. We can add another word, burger Bidenflation. I happened to see this. This was on social media last week. Made the rounds. A Five Guys customer, Five Guys Burgers. I've been there, I think, twice. They've got one not far from where I reside. And I think maybe in 10 years, I've been there twice. The fries are good. The burger, not so good. Thought it was okay. But on social media, it made the rounds where somebody went to Five Guys, and they posted their receipt. And it came to $24 for a bacon cheeseburger, a regular soda, and a small fry. Now, their fries are good, but they get for a small fry $5.19. A bacon cheeseburger, $12.49. And I have to tell you, there have been a number of restaurants that I've gone to lately where the prices have just jumped, and I've been extremely disappointed, whether having a chicken sandwich or a burger. It's been, food was marginal. They definitely cut down on the size of the burger. I could tell because at one time there was a place I used to go to, a tavern type of place, a chain. They probably had a nice, it was, I would say at least a 6.5-7 ounce burger patty, good quality meat. When I got it this time, ordered the same thing. If there was 4 ounces in that patty, I would have been shocked. And I looked at the server and I said, what happened? She said, well, we have cut down. I said, well, you didn't cut down on the price because it was $18.50 for a burger and, you know, a little side. So here is Five Guys, which by no stretch of the imagination is a fancy joint. Bacon cheeseburger, $12.49. Regular soda, $2.89. A small fry, $5.19. $20.57 subtotal. With sales tax, the order came to $21.91. And this person put on a $2.19 tip, a 10% tip. Now, there is no counter service, or there's no sitting service. You order, you get your order, and you sit down. And the tipping, that's a topic for another subject. I mean, I love when you go to these restaurants now, and they have the electronic, you know, machine, like they'll leave it at your table, or you'll go at a casual fast food place, or casual a restaurant. And the first thing it says is 25% tip, 30% tip, or other. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, for a salad and a drink, I just paid, what, $20, $22? And now you want to put 30%, a $6 tip, when nobody came out and served me? For that kind of price, it's up to the restaurant to pay their people. And in many cases, they're being forced to because of the increase in minimum wages, $18, $20 an hour. In fact, most places today, because of the lack of labor, they're hiring people at $20, $22 an hour. So everywhere you look, they want more, more, more. And I've always been generous tipping, especially if I'm at a sit-down restaurant. But if I'm at a takeout restaurant and they don't do anything, why am I tipping? And a lot of people are feeling the same way. So here we have $24 for a meal. Now, I thought about this because I now have gotten into making these cool smash burgers, but most of these restaurants use either 75-25 or 80-20, meaning 80% lean, 20% fat, which is still extremely high in fat content. I buy at the supermarket the 93-7. I try to buy the grass-fed. And I definitely don't want the beef that has the hormones and all the other garbage. So I just happened to purchase a pound of the 93-7 at one of the local supermarkets. It costs $7.99 a pound. So I figured, I said, let me calculate and see how much it would cost me to make a burger that they are charging $12.50 for. So, and their burger, I have a feeling, is maybe 5 ounces of meat. Maybe. Probably less than that. Well, I calculated on mine, 7 ounces. 7 ounces of meat, pre-cooking, cost $3.49. The bun that I purchased, 30 cents. And I know because there were 8 buns in the pack. I got the sesame seed, nice big buns. And I know exactly how much I paid. It was like, I think it was at Costco, I think it was like $2.40, something like that. So 30 cents for the bun. An American cheese slice, 40 cents. The condiments, I figured 20 cents. Basically pickles, little mustard, little ketchup. The bacon, 30 cents. Grand total, I came to, was about $4.69. And I will tell you that my burger tastes fantastic. It is tasty, seasoned properly. It's not loaded with juicy fat and garbage. It is fantastic. When I make them for friends, my smash burgers, they go nuts. Double smash burger on there with a slice of melted American cheese right in the middle. They love it. I even put it in the little paper so when you eat it, it doesn't come all over the place. Kind of like when you go to certain restaurants, they put it in that little like wax paper kind of thing. I bought some on Amazon. Beautiful. Cost me $4.69 compared to $12.50. Now, I don't have a problem going out to restaurants and saying, hey, look, you're going to pay a premium. They've got to make the food. You've got rent. You've got everything. I get that. But I can tell you that it is so disappointing these days going out to restaurants, especially steakhouses. When I can go out and grab a steak, a nice bone-in ribeye, pound and a half ribeye, bone-in, beautiful, that I can get for somewhere around $12.99, $13.99 a pound, because there's sales all over the place. They use that as a loss leader. And then you go into one of the steakhouses, and you pick any, Morton's, Capital Grill, The Palm, Jeff Ruby, you name it. Any steakhouse. Bones in Atlanta. They're all great steakhouses. I mean, Jeff Ruby's great. Bones I love. But when you go and it's $85 or $80 for a bone-in ribeye, and they used to put how many ounces the steak was on the menu. Now many of the steakhouses have eliminated that. So it used to be a 22-ounce bone-in ribeye. And now I ask, is that 22? No, now it's 16. So you're paying more and getting less. That is Bidenflation. And every time I go out, I'm disappointed. You get a steak. Is it good? Sure. I can make it every bit as good. In fact, better. I can get the same char, the same medium rare Pittsburgh style. In fact, I can even dry age my steak properly for, you know, a week, 2 weeks. No problem. But I find that by the time you're done with the steak, the entree, and then a salad, and then maybe you get some vegetables or some potatoes, another side dish. By the time you're done, you're talking about $150 a person, and that's before tip, and that's before a cocktail. And then they're rushing you. They're trying to get you out of there because they want to turn the tables, and it's just so unenjoyable. And by the way, I can't smoke a cigar there. Now, the Capital Grill here in the Cigar City of Tampa, outside, they're very cigar-friendly, very accommodating. They're wonderful. But I can sit here outside at the Pleasure Palace, cook a steak on my giant BTU grill, get that super sear, that Pittsburgh-style char, can make some beautiful sides, have a cigar, have some nice spirits, wine. I don't have to worry about getting an Uber. Don't have to worry about DUI. I certainly don't have to worry about a WWI, a walking while intoxicated. I'm not a big drinker. I'll have maybe one glass of wine, maybe one glass of spirit. Not a big drinker at all, but I like quality, not quantity. Same thing with cigars. People say all the time, General, how many cigars a day do you smoke? And the answer is, I don't. Sometimes I'll smoke one a week, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes half a week. It's all about quality, not quantity. So what I find amazing is I can stay home, have some of my friends come over, make great steaks. And here's what I normally do. I say, I'll take care of the steaks. You bring the sides. So you bring the salad. One of you brings the dessert. Some, you know, you get the vegetable. You know what they do most of the time? Some will make it, but they'll just go to either one of the steakhouses and say, you know what? I got a whole bunch of sides. I got two giant baked potatoes. I got a couple of cream spinaches. I got a couple of lobster mac and cheese. And I got some, you know, regular broccoli. Great. And then I make the steaks. And everybody has a and I provide the cigars, and everybody has a phenomenal time. It is so much more enjoyable to eat at home when the weather is nice, outside, with my cigar in between courses, nobody rushing me. I don't have to be formal. You can sit, especially here in Florida, now that's going to be summer, the rest of the country coming up to spring and summer in shorts. Just a relaxed atmosphere, and you get a fantastic steak for a fraction of the price. It is all about enjoyment. And now when you look at the bill and say, my gosh, I just had a steak that was good, not phenomenal. All these sides, one drink, tip, tax. I just spent $200. Where did that go? Did I get $200 worth of enjoyment? And the answer is no. We talked about the new Monte Cristo cigar, 1935 anniversary Doble. $150. It's all about value. Do you think you're getting $150 worth of value when you smoke that cigar? It's the same thing. When I go to a steakhouse, am I getting $200 or $220 worth of value when I'm eating that steak or having those sides or having my salad or having that libation? The answer is no. I'm not getting value. Now, the economy has been still strong, but there's going to come a time. And when you look at some of the more moderately priced restaurants, they're starting to report a softness. And remember, many people are funding their ability to keep up with inflation. They're putting it on their credit cards. Credit card debt just hit the highest ever last quarter. And I'm sure when we look at this quarter, it'll be even a higher. It'll smash that record. Car repossessions. We're starting to see higher rates than even during the Wuhan pandemic. So when you see all this going on, Bidenflation, prices out of control, every time you look around, and this nonsense, oh, we've only got 3.2% annualized inflation, bullshit. Gas is up probably 20% just in the last month. You go in, I'm seeing the cost of meat now. Chicken rising again. Eggs rising again. I mean, for a dozen eggs now, and I'd like to get the pasture, the organic, because I don't like all the garbage that they put. And that's going to be a topic of another show, because the amount of garbage the FDA allows in our food system is criminal. They're worried about cigars. They ought to be worried about what is being put in our food. Garbage. Chemicals, derivatives that would never be allowed in Europe. They're allowed here in the U.S., but the FDA is worried about people smoking a cigar. Please, spare me. Inflation under Biden, Bidenflation, rampant. Rampant. This nonsense where 3% is bull. You know it. You go into the supermarket, you can tell. Fill up your car, you can tell. Power bills, energy bills, everything is higher. Insurance, through the roof. Everywhere we turn around, Bidenflation is destroying the ability of Americans to get value. And if you can't get value when you go to a restaurant, whether you're spending $30, $300, or $500, if you're not getting value for what you're receiving, forget it. I would rather stay home. And in fact, I have. I took a look and see what I actually spent going out to dinner last year compared to years prior, way down. Do I miss it? No. I still like going out to lunch, but I find it's just so much more enjoyable having my cigar, being casual, not being in a stuffy environment, not have to wait for a table when you check in for some hostess that thinks she's, you know, that she's like on a power trip. And I say, hey, I've got a reservation for 6:30. Okay, you can wait in the bar. It'll be about half an hour. Excuse me? I made a reservation so that when I'm here, it should only be about 5 minutes. And then when they send you to the bar, do they give you a complimentary beverage? Do they give you a complimentary appetizer? Hell no. So why do I want to go to these places when I get no enjoyment and I'm not getting the value? And that's the equation you have to ask yourself too. Are you getting the value relative to how much you are paying for that meal? Five Guys Burger, $25 for a burger, fries, and a soda. That's not value. Zero interest. And by the way, their burgers aren't so great. Most places you go to, the burgers aren't that great anymore. You're better off to do it at home. And I'll tell you, everybody loves my award-winning smash burgers. I even bought one of those little smash presses and the little pieces of paper so I get the beef. And now what I do is I smash them, put them in the freezer, boom. Value. If you're not getting that value proposition, whether it's a cigar, whether it's for an entertainment, movie, night out, at a restaurant, if you're not getting value, walk away. And more people are doing that. Make sure you subscribe to the Cigar Dave Show. Why? So every time we upload a new show, whether it is on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or on iHeart or Spotify, anywhere we happen, we're on every platform. So any platform you listen to the Cigar Dave Show, be sure to subscribe so that when every new show drops, like today, we dropped this. This is now recording this Wednesday. This is going to be dropped probably Wednesday tonight or Thursday in the morning. This way you are always aware of when we drop a new show. We load a new show. So make sure you subscribe to the Cigar Dave Show. All right, we are just over a week away. I absolutely cannot wait to get that corned beef that I'm brining, and I will take pictures. I will show that to you. That is going to be absolutely one fantastic cut of corned beef. Cigar Dave, the general, saying, may your humidor always be full. May your cutter always be sharp. May your ash be extra, extra long. Semper Delectatio, always pleasure. Long live the alpha. Make masculinity great again. Screw the enemies of pleasure. Hashtag save America. Hashtag make America great again. Hashtag Trump 2024. If you are not registered to vote as a Republican, do so. And I'm telling people now, you've got to vote early. No more day of voting. That is all